Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on The Conversation. It's Aloha Friday, March 8th. Today is Hawaii Tourism Day at the state legislature. We talked to the Hawaii Convention Center manager about future bookings and about that leaky roof and the $64 million question. Will it get fixed? What to do when air travel is literally your lifeline and you can't connect? The growing concern about canceled or delayed flights on the neighbor islands where airline options are limited. And we hear the inspiring journey of a Hawaii cyclist who spins for charity. Against all odds, Doug Concha completes a 9-month adventure across 6 continents and 23 countries, and he tries to make the Guinness Book of World Records. You're listening to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. State lawmakers last year cut funding for the Hawaii Tourism Authority as well as money in the budget to fix a leaking roof at the Hawaii Convention Center. The governor planned to set aside money in a discretionary fund for the renovation fixes, but that didn't get released because of the Maui fires. This year, lawmakers are being asked again for $64 million to finally fix it. We talked to Terry Orton, the convention center manager, about the leaks, particularly with the heavy rains that we've had on and off all week.
As I was leaving the convention center, I could barely see driving out of the convention center. It was raining so heavy. We do have a couple rooms that were taken out of inventory. Fortunately, they were not booked. So as soon as we can dry those rooms up, we have blowers out, and we kind of have a routine here. When it rains, we know where the leaks are. So everyone's on communication email to deploy all the buckets, so to speak, to catch the water leaks where we know they normally are. And then we just figure out and put fires out as they come up.
But that's no way to run a convention center. I mean, you're hoping that lawmakers will pass all the money you need to get the fix.
Yes, absolutely. And so the governor was gracious enough to give us the money last year, but unfortunately, the money had to go to Maui fires, which completely understandable. You know, that was definitely not something we had anticipated. So we're back asking for the $64 million again, you know, understanding the state's situation with everything going on Maui, that we may or may not get approval on it. You know, it's been leaking for the past 20 plus years. The building's 25 years old now. You know, the leaks have progressively gotten worse. Now it's encroaching into areas that we can no longer hide from general public. It's getting into meeting rooms. So when it does rain now, it does take rooms out of inventory, which is unfortunate because we are so busy right now. 24 and 25, extremely busy. We rarely have dates on the calendar that we have open. So it's hard for us to navigate around rooms when they're taken out of order, especially when we have large citywides that actually buy out our entire building. Having to ask them to consolidate meeting rooms, consolidate offices, just because we have to take out anywhere from 4 to 10 rooms sometimes when it rains for a long period of time. So we really need this funding to fix our roof so that we can truly not have to worry about weather.
As far as the citywide events, I mean, things aren't back to normal like they were before the pandemic. And we've got lots of local events that you folks are playing host to. But what can you tell us about those citywide events? Like, what are some big ones that are coming up this year that we can look forward to?
Well, citywides are definitely not back to pre-pandemic levels. I mean, just for an example, on average, we probably would service about 25 to 28 citywides a year. The next 2 years, we probably are hitting record numbers of 20 citywides right now, just post-pandemic. So, you know, but 26 onward, very little citywides on the books. I think 50% of what we have for 24 and 25 were events that were moved because of COVID. We moved them out into these years. And then our sales team from the Visitor Bureau has been doing a good job in picking up new business. So the other 50% is new business that just decided to basically book short term. So we're very fortunate for that. But as I mentioned, 2026 onward, we're in a peak right now and then it goes into a valley. So all of our sales efforts are focused on 2026, 27, 28, 29, and 2030. Those are kind of the windows of years that we're in the booking window now.
People need to understand that these conventions are generally booked years in advance.
Yes, anywhere from 5 to 7 to 10 years out. But we're starting to see the booking window shorten now, which is in our favor because we need short-term business to fill some of those years outside of 26. So very fortunate. And then, of course, local business has come back very strong post-COVID. We're very fortunate that our local business has really helped us fill in areas where we did not have citywide business on the books. So right now, probably about 50% of our revenue is local business and 50% is offshore. In good years, it's usually, we like a 70-30 where 70% is offshore and 30% is local business. Because of course, offshore business fills all of our hotels, which is our sole purpose.
You know, I remember a time when there was concern that the convention center would compete for some of other venues for some of these local events. But that's what's seeing us through these lean times.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of business for everyone. A lot of the hotels are actually really busy. So by default, we get business. Like I said, we're not here to compete with any of the hotels. We're just here to offer another option to consumers.
And so if we do get the money appropriated to fix the roof, how is that going to affect bookings? Will it?
So our plan is, you know, state procurement's pretty laborious. So we're having to go through state procurement, which we have a project manager on board now. We're in the process of getting an architect on board and putting the architectural plans into a calendar. We're probably looking at starting the actual construction in the latter half of 2025. That's going through planning and permitting, which takes a while. And then construction will be a whole year. So from fourth quarter of 2025, probably the entire year of 2026, which will allow us start and stop dates to navigate around events that we already have on the books. So our intent is to not have construction be disruptive to any business that we have in our building.
Part of the effort to keep the maintenance up, you know, on this facility, I imagine, is also looking at revenue. And I know there's a bill that lawmakers are considering that would allow advertising. Tell us about that.
Yes. So we actually have a bill. It's SB 3006. Basically, it's a request for an exemption to an existing HRS that's in place that prohibits state buildings from advertising and marketing in or outside of the building. So at this point, we're just trying to seek an exemption to start discussions on naming rights. And that would be another revenue stream for the convention center to help offset capital improvement projects expenses here for repairs and maintenance.
And so what do you tell the community that may not have buy-in on that? Because we do have a strict billboard law, mm-hmm. and they may not like that idea.
Yeah. So our intention is not to put up a distracting moving billboard, digital signage out in front of our building to advertise and market an organization. Our intention is to basically, and this is just an example, to have just a static sign like we currently have. It's a neon sign. I know that there's been talk. We actually got added to the Stadium Authority's bill for their naming rights as well. And, you know, there was discussion about billboards and moving signs and it being distractive to drivers, which I totally understand. That is not our intention. Our intention is to hopefully brand our building with a local corporation's name that would pay us annually to do that with a non-distracting sign, similar to like the one that we currently have on the building. It would just have a company's name on it. What this exemption would also allow us is to advertise and market inside of our building as well. So then we could have moving signs in the building for advertising and marketing, and it would open opportunities not just for us to generate revenue, but also meeting planners and organizations that do business in our building. They could also sell advertising and marketing opportunities to their exhibitors that are on the showroom floor.
So I'm thinking like with the sports events that you have here, advertising in those rooms?
Yes, absolutely. So it would allow the organizer then to be able to sell advertising and marketing space on these digital boards within their rented space.
And then right now you've got signage in the glass exterior mm-hmm. or interior, but you've got signs in there advertising the Honolulu Festival. I don't know, do those go against the billboard laws right now?
No, so we're allowed to advertise any show or event that's in our building. We just can't sell advertisement.
Where's that bill at now?
It's crossover, right?
So. It's crossed over, I believe. So we'll see where it goes. Our fingers are crossed. Like I said, it's just something that we want to keep in our tool chest. It's an option that we want to explore in the future. But right now, we can't even have discussions because we're not allowed to hang any kind of advertising or signage on our building outside or inside.
And it's limited to, if I recall, the original bill, travel companies? things like that?
Yeah, so the process would be, of course, we'd start local first. So we'd offer naming rights to any local company that would want to come to the table. And then if we didn't get takers or we didn't have anyone that we felt would best represent the convention center, then we would seek national and international companies the opportunity to brand their name on our building.
Gosh, so what can you tell us just as far as bookings for any citywides that are going to be in town in 2024?
A big one coming up is going to be Pokemon. We're hosting our first Pokemon convention here at the Hawaii Convention Center, so that's exciting. The nice thing is that the Japanese is returning for group business. I know that the leisure side of travel has not returned to pre-pandemic levels because of their economy, but the nice thing that we are seeing now is that there are some large Japanese groups that are traveling here. We just signed a contract for another Japanese return group that's coming, and they're bringing, this year, I think it's 7,500 Japanese for 3 consecutive days of banquet events here. So that's nice to see the Japanese are returning. Some other groups that we have, some of the medical associations that we've had in the past are returning again. So scientific groups are coming back. So yeah, we've, 24 and 25 are good years for us citywide. And our sales team is actively looking and recruiting and vetting through leads for 26 onward.
And then this summer, I know you are also playing host to the FestPac. That location was moved from the university to the convention center. So what does that mean for your facility here?
Yeah, so that we are so honored to be able to host that. Actually, they were going to split the conference and build the village at the East-West Center at UH. And then they decided just logistically that wasn't going to work. So they moved the entire conference over to the center. So they will have the village set up in our exhibition halls. And they'll be using all of our meeting room space for breakout sessions, educational programs. And I believe they're actually even going to be using the rooftop as well. So our building will be a host to all of those different countries that are coming. So,
and then the rooftop's going to be okay to use?
Hopefully, yes, it will be. It'll be. We're still able to use the rooftop. It leaks, right? So it's what's below it that we can't use when it does rain. But, the rooftop it's a beautiful space. Many, many events that we host up there. We host in the past the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival out there. It's just a beautiful space. And we're going to get it repaired, and it'll return even better than it is today.
Okay, well, Terry Orton, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Aloha.
And that was Terry Orton, Hawaii Convention Center General Manager, talking to us about the outlook for business at the facility, as well as its ask to get a waiver for a law banning advertising on state facilities so it can raise money to help with the center's bottom line.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Honolulu Waldorf School and Noheia Gallery.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Robert Fuller, author of Questions and Quests. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about question asking, human dignity, and artificial intelligence.
Sunday morning at 11.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, with info sessions for the 2024 Distance Learning Executive MBA and Master of HR Management, scheidler.hawaii.edu/executive.
You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. What to do when misconnections start to impact your medical care? That is the situation for some residents living on Molokai. HPR's Catherine Kluwet-Pachtel joins us this morning. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning.
Yeah, so this has been just a long-standing issue for the poor residents there.
It has been. So residents of both Molokai and Lanai are seeing that they're missing critical medical appointments off-island because flights are being delayed or canceled pretty frequently. Mokulele is the only air carrier for Molokai and also the primary carrier for Lanai. Randy Taniguchi-Fu is a primary care doctor and medical director of Molokai General Hospital and outpatient clinic.
So when you're relying on the airlines to get people to see these critical specialists, that's like a lot of times life and death. And with such an unreliable airlines, it puts a lot of strain. It puts a lot of pressure on the, of course, the patient is affected the most because they can't get adequate care. But as a provider, it's difficult to practice here because when the patient can't go out, I tend to have to do a lot of things here, and I want to as much as I can here on Molokai, but it's kind of, you know, a strain. Say you're a patient and you have an appointment on Oahu, and a lot of these specialists, say an orthopedic doctor or a pulmonologist, even nephrologist, I mean, they're booked out months. So they've been waiting for this one appointment, and I've been waiting for the patients, this one appointment for months, and then Mokulele just decides that day they're going to cancel their 6:10 a.m. flight and put them on a 2:30 p.m. flight when their appointment on Oahu is 12. So they have to miss their appointment, and then now they're going to have to wait even longer to get rescheduled, and then hopefully that time the flight leaves. But I've had patients trying to see specialists or get, you know, procedures done, and it's been months because of the multiple rescheduled flights.
Yeah, it's such a challenge, you know, for the folks in remote areas who are trying to get to, you know, Honolulu, you know, or wherever, just because it's, you know, a real challenge.
It is. And talking to a provider on Lanai says the same thing is happening. She says she's a registered nurse there. She says her patients have put off life-altering procedures just because they don't want to have to deal with these unreliable flights. And when they do, you know, same thing. A lot of delays that cause them to miss their appointments. Specialists visiting the island are also affected by these flight issues. So some people have said, well, you know, just bring the specialists to Molokai and Lanai and save all these patients trying to go over. But, you know, they're affected by the same issues. So specialists will take the day off from their own clinics to come to the neighbor islands, you know, have flight delays, and then they have to cancel that whole day of clinics on Molokai or Lanai because of those delayed flights. And many are saying they have to discontinue visits to the island just because they can't make it work for, you know, they're losing money, they're losing time. Patients often have to travel the day before their appointments to guarantee that they'll make it there. And that's extra cost for them, a lot of times out of pocket for hotels. One of those patients is Andrea Dudua from Molokai, who is battling breast cancer and has to go to Oahu regularly for treatments and checkups. And she says she now books her flight the day before because she can't take that chance that she'll miss her appointments due to flight delays.
There was twice my chemo was delayed. Well, once it was delayed and once it was canceled because of transportation, because of flight. So basically, you either delayed or canceled. So that would delay my treatment. And that happened twice, unfortunately. And so I have to be pushed back like another week because I can't just walk in there or just say, you know, like, hey, I can't make it today. Can I just come in? Can I just walk in and do it? No, because there's so many people that have treatment that the time slots are just pretty hard to get through. Because of my chemo, I had a very bad reaction that landed me in the hospital. I was in the hospital for 7 days. I got released, discharged from the hospital, went straight to Mokulele, checked in, and then after checking in, I got a text that my flight was 5.5 hours delayed. And I was in no condition. I mean, I think at this point, a lot of people just expect delays and cancellations because it's just that's the new norm, unfortunately. But I was in no shape to hang out at the airport for that amount of time because I was still recovering. There's no way I could have done that. So I called a family member at very last minute, and I stayed the night.
Yeah, I mean, that's rough, you know, your chemo, gosh.
Yeah, it's hard. And not everyone has family that they're able to stay with last minute like that. Dr. Taniguchi Fu says, you know, paying for a hotel to go the day before, or if there's delays on the return flight, is cost prohibitive for a lot of her patients. So there is a bill that's moving through legislature right now, House Bill 2544, proposed by Representative Mahina Poipoi, and it basically would establish charter flights for non-emergency medical flights for Molokai and Lanai patients. So it's passed in the House and crossed over to the Senate, and it establishes a two-year pilot program through the Department of Health, and the Department of Health would then charter flights to ensure that patients are able to make it to their appointments. And Poipoi says she was motivated to create the bill because this problem has existed for years, and she says it's just getting worse. Then there's Mokulele Chief of Staff Keith Sisson, who thinks the bill won't be necessary because it's based on problems that he says are in the past. Sisson says the company has new aircraft coming, and non-weather-related delays, he thinks, won't be a problem in the future.
In the last few months, we've run a much improved operation for the people of Molokai. In the last 2 months, we're looking at a 96% completion rate, and unfortunately, a lot of times when we do have weather involved, and there was just terrible weather in the first couple of months of the year, people may remember back in January when the Kona lows came through, you know, we were socked in. We weren't able to get flights in and out of Molokai and Lanai for a couple of days, and that happened over a course of two or three instances throughout a six-week period. And those present great problems and difficulties because, you know, with flights that are already reserved for the following day, when you do have cancels on one day, it's hard to get people reaccommodated immediately onto the next flight. So that is a difficulty, and that will, you know, that is improving as we have additional aircraft dedicated to the marketplace, and we'll have three additional aircraft coming in the next 2 weeks. So that's pretty exciting for us as well. And when we have those instances where we have those kind of long delays that drag out over a couple of days due to weather, we'll have the extra aircraft now to reaccommodate those passengers.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, gosh, I think of the days, you know, when we had Aloha and Hawaiian flying, there were more options for people just inner island in general. But, you know, I don't know if anything's going to change because there's talk with Alaska and Hawaiian merging. What do you know about that?
There is. So I did check in with Alaska Airlines, and unfortunately, you know, though people were holding out hope that that merger would bring some competition, executives from the airlines say they're not considering getting those smaller aircraft to fly into Molokai and Lanai because of the smaller runways here would necessitate them getting new aircraft, and they say they're not considering that at this time. And just to be clear, you know, these patients aren't talking about weather delays. I think everybody understands that weather delays happen, but, you know, the delays and cancellations that they're referring to are not related to weather. But there is a nonprofit called Angel Flight West. It's a network nationally of volunteer pilots, and they provide free flights for patients in these situations trying to make it to medical appointments. Last year in Hawaii, they flew 189 missions, 97 of which were to Molokai. So that really speaks to the need. 16 were to Lanai. And Ace Ellenwood, Hawaii wing leader and volunteer pilot with the organization, says that there's really a greater demand than there is a supply at this point. So it's a huge ongoing need for sure.
Yeah, and I know, you know, there's the talk about those electric planes that will glide, you know, over the ocean. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully that there will be options for residents there on Molokai and Lanai. But thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you.
We've been talking with HPR's Catherine Kluwet-Pachtel. Look for her stories at hawaiipublicradio.org.
The Academy Awards are Sunday. On the next Fresh Air, we feature our interviews with two nominees from the movie Poor Things. Emma Stone, nominated for her starring role as Bella, a woman reanimated to life by an eccentric surgeon, and Mark Ruffalo, who's nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role as a cad obsessed with Bella. Join us.
Fresh Air, beginning this afternoon at 3, following Science Friday.
HPR is hiring for a full-time membership manager. Are you experienced in nonprofit fundraising? A public radio superfan? This is the job opportunity for you. Join HPR's growing and passionate team. Apply by March 31st. Learn more at hawaiipublicradio.org/jobs.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz.
Onihoa, olehua, onihau, okaua, oahu, omolokai, olanai, omau, okaholabe, ohawaii.
It's been over 2 decades since we said goodbye to a culinary pioneer who revolutionized his signature huli huli chicken. In 1955, a large group of farmers asked the head of Pacific Poultry to provide food for their meeting, to feed the farmers, the subject of today's backyard quiz. He decided to broil some chickens that had been marinating in a special teriyaki sauce. According to all accounts, the farmers thought the chicken was delectable and immediately requested more. From there, the idea of marketing the chicken developed. The name huli huli came from the Hawaiian word for turn, referencing the process of turning the birds once they were cooked on one side. The name was ultimately trademarked to distinguish the product from regular teriyaki chicken. From there, selling the product became a common fundraising method for schools, charities, and nonprofit organizations. In today's Backyard Quiz, we honor the man responsible for all the mouth-watering goodness, even if it comes with all that smoke. But I like that smoke. So who was he? Call 808-941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. Pick up a reusable HP or tote bag if you're the first one to get it right.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing access to affordable housing to those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, including ARC of Maui County. NereidHawaii.com.
When you support HPR, you support locally produced programs featuring locally produced music, including Kani Kapila Sunday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kani Kapila Sunday. I'm Kaylee Iloma, and I'm so happy to be with you again on a Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. to offer you great Hawaiian music from all periods.
Hawaii Kula Ivi.
Aloha nui kako. You are tuned in to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio 1's Hawaii Kula Ivi. Ovo no keio, DJ Mermaid, Paige Okamura.
And Mauka Tumakai.
This is Mauka Tumakai. I'm your host, Roger Bong.
Your support brings the music of Hawaii to the world. Support Hawaiian and local music programs on HPR. Donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Concha cycles for charity. He doesn't take the easy way out. It was a week ago today that he completed a 9-month-long trek across the globe on a bicycle to raise money for Doctors Without Borders. Did we mention he was also trying to make it into the Guinness Book of World Records? He did the trip a month earlier than originally planned, and that was even with 3 accidents, including one that sent him to the hospital 10 days before he was to complete the trek. Yep, it's a pretty incredible story that we wanted to share with you. He's an inspiration to all. Here's a clip from a welcome he came home to from members of the Hawaii Bicycling League who cheered his success as he arrived on his bike at Ala Moana Beach Park.
Yeah. world record isn't just for me. It goes to all the people that helped me, the hundreds of people across six continents through illnesses and injuries, through so many heartbreaks and failures. People came out of nowhere and helped me and kept me going. And my mission to raise money for Doctors Without Borders and to feel close to those that suffer around the world in war, famine, and natural disasters also kept me going. So, and coming back home, coming back to my fiance, to these beautiful islands, and to my family and friends kept me going. So thank you so much for all your love and support. I'm just truly blessed. Thank you so much. I love you all very much.
You know, we invited Doug Concha into our studios this week to chat about his adventure trying to circumvent the globe. He was in several crashes in the process, but it was those experiences which almost ended his mission that taught him something about himself.
I think it's as epic of an experience as one could imagine, even more than I could have imagined. 18,000 miles, six continents, through nine different climates, on a single-speed bicycle. Self-supported, meaning all the logistics, food, water, shelter, routes, SIM cards, money exchanges, visas, like everything I had to coordinate on my own with the clock constantly ticking, accidents, injuries, illnesses. That clock was always running, and I had to keep crossing continents and thousands of miles and places where I didn't speak the language or understand the culture. And so there were all these challenges, but they always counterbalanced with all the beauty of nature. I spent 80% of my time alone, completely isolated in nature, going between cities or even small towns. And that nature is just perfect. It's beautiful, it's quiet. Even if it's brutalizing you with blistering deserts or freezing sub-zero temperatures, it's always beautiful. And then the people along the way, all the kind people, but literally hundreds of people who helped me in all those moments of crises that helped me figure out a way to overcome them and pushed me along. So even with this world record, it's just going to have my name on it. But the truth is that 60% of it was done by all these countless people who helped me along the way.
Encouragement, right?
Yeah, and the real physical support, like even like when my bicycles were destroyed or when I was injured or ill, like these people physically helped me with their time and their money and their energy. And yeah, and then all the people through social media, friends and family at home, constantly giving me love and support and me knowing that there was someone back there to come home to.
Yeah. So, okay, let's back up a second.
Yeah.
Because talk about those accidents along the way.
We don't want to talk about the beauty.
Well, I mean,
I'm just kidding.
I think shows the determination that you have because you're trying to raise money for these charities.
Yeah.
And there are challenges. It's not an easy path to take.
Yeah, if it was easy, everyone would do it. So that's another thing. The challenge, I didn't really know if I could achieve this Guinness World Record I'm establishing, because no one had either the imagination or anything else to even think it was possible to cross the entire world on a single speed in this kind of time frame. So I wasn't even sure if I could do it. And yet, having done it, I can't believe I did it. Actually, I can't believe I crossed Africa and Indonesia and the winds of Patagonia. It almost doesn't seem real. But as far as like the injuries and the illnesses, on top of the 100-mile-per-day rides, I got COVID twice. I got food poisoning twice, once in Indonesia, once in Africa. I was involved in an accident with a turned-over truck that was a pile-up in Indonesia. I fell into a huge crater-sized pothole during the monsoon seasons in Botswana and broke that bike also again. And then I guess the last and the largest one was in Texas, 10 days before the end of this ride. I was hit and completely run over by an SUV in Beaumont, Texas. That left me hospitalized for a couple of days. I had staples in my head, a dislocated shoulder, torn, a partial tear of my tendon in my groin, a knee injury, and to be able to shed a lot of tears thinking that I came across the whole world just to come back home to the U.S. and for this to possibly end 10 days before was really heartbreaking emotionally. But I found the courage, and I remembered what I loved so much about this ride, which was to raise money for Doctors Without Borders, that I pushed forward. I got back on the bike after a couple of days, and with incredible tears and pain every single moment, I continued the 100 miles per day to the finish line until I got back here, back home in Hawaii.
I just admire your resilience and your persistence and your determination and grit to see it through.
Yeah, in a way, there are a couple of feelings I had that I've shared with friends and family that thought were odd. One was the morning after I left the hospital. I slept that night really painfully, but the first thing I thought about when I woke up was the person that hit me. And I was concerned about that person, especially because, I mean, I had blacked out, and I only woke up after the firefighters had removed me and the bicycle from underneath the SUV and on the side of the grass. But I was very badly injured. I was bleeding out of my head profusely. And I wouldn't even open my eyes because I was genuinely scared that I was permanently injured. But I could hear all these concerned people around me and the EMT speaking in more calmer voices, asking questions. And then there was this one woman who was answering them all. And she was being very candid that she hadn't seen me, that she had hit me, that she was looking at her GPS apparently. But then amongst all that, there was like what sounded like a teenage girl, and she was screaming. She was hysterical, and she was just crying and saying, "Did we kill him? Did we kill him?"
Oh my gosh.
And I got the impression that maybe this was this woman's daughter. And like I said, fast forward a couple of days, and my first night out of the hospital, I woke up that morning, and I thought about like these people, and I thought I wanted to console them. Of course, what they did was really dangerous, and it almost ended my life. But at the same time, I was alive and I was here, and I just wanted them to know not to put any undue stress on their or suffering on their own lives. That hopefully they would learn their lesson, but not to go more than that. What was necessary. The other kind of feeling that is a little strange that I've shared was just I actually feel in a way, not that I would do it again, but that this accident was truly a blessing, because throughout my life, I've done many things that have impressed other people, but I had always known in my heart that I hadn't given it my all, that I achieved some high level in life, but that whenever I got to that moment of ultimate sacrifice, that I had always backed down. And so I achieved a silver medal as opposed to a gold. Still better than everyone else, but wasn't my best. And when I set off on this journey, I wanted to see if I could finally challenge that and face those fears and give everything for something I loved. And if I could feel that freedom of just giving it all. And that wreck and that car accident and my ability to keep going afterwards finally proved to me that I was really willing to give everything for something that I loved.
That was Doug Concha, who we talked to earlier this week. We're going to take a break, but we'll continue our conversation with him. He just finished a trek around the globe on a single gear bike to raise money for Doctors Without Borders. Stay with us.
Support for HPR comes from UH Presents and East West Center Arts. Indian violinist Maestro Kala Ramnath performs March 10th at UH Manoa Orvis Auditorium. Outreach.hawaii.edu/events.
The Harlem Renaissance was a vibrant period of Black self-expression, and a new exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York explores how this 100-year-old movement set up cultural debates we're still having today. Like, what is Black art for? Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR, where we see the Harlem Renaissance in our culture today.
Beginning Saturday at noon.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Ulupono Initiative.
Let's get back to our interview with Hawaii Bicycling League member Doug Concha. It's been a week since he completed an adventure to bike across the world to raise money for charity. He was also trying to get into the Guinness Book of World Records, which is not easy. He is resting up now and can focus on recovering from his injuries. Here's Concha.
I'm constantly focused on the charity and the men and women who put their lives on the line in very dangerous situations to save the people that are most vulnerable due to war, famine, natural disasters, from Palestine to the Ukraine to Africa. Like, these people have committed their lives to helping others and put their own lives in danger. And I'm so impressed. And I truly look up to those people as people might look up to me who enjoy cycling and doing physical activities. And it's that suffering and that kept me going, in fact, because when I was in frozen Europe or blistering Africa and under a lot of duress, I kept thinking that I know for a fact that there are people suffering and dying around the world in this moment. And if they can hold on for another day under even more terrible conditions than anything I was putting myself through, that I could also endure. And so it was that kind of realization of human suffering that I felt connected to my fellow human beings. It brought us together.
And you were able to actually visit some of these offices around the world.
That's right. Yeah, I went to regional offices in Australia and Africa and Europe, always with the express purpose to go in there and thank them in person for their service, which they were often surprised because I would show up and they wanted to thank me for highlighting their organization and raising money, and I always had to reverse it and say, no, thank you. I came here to thank you for your service.
How is it that you chose Doctors Without Borders?
Like you said, it was my third third rodeo. The first one was to cycle across the U.S. on a single speed for the March of Dimes. And that was inspired by my niece, who was born prematurely, and I wanted to do something for her. And so after that project was done, I didn't think much about cycling anymore until the pandemic. And I took a year sabbatical from teaching, and I started to imagine maybe another ride. So in 22, I circumnavigated the European continent for the World Food Program, which was another organization that I truly admired for a very long time. And halfway through that attempt, I realized that I hadn't, even though this was even more impressive, it was a continent as opposed to a country and still all on a single speed, I knew it wasn't that limit that I was looking for. So I immediately, like halfway through this continental ride, I started imagining the world record for circumnavigation. And I was looking for, at that point, for another charity. And I wanted one that was as reputable, as transparent. I'm really nobody but a name, but I still care about what I tie my name to. And the nonprofit world, for any educated person knows, can be as corrupt as the for-profit world. And so I definitely wanted to do my due diligence and find another organization that had that kind of highest standard.
The integrity.
Yeah, the integrity, exactly. And maybe I fancy myself having some integrity. So I wanted that connection. So it didn't take long. I already had a couple of nonprofits in my mind, and I ended up choosing Doctors Without Borders for that reason, because of the real impact and, as you said, integrity.
And so why a single gear bike? Let's make it really hard.
It ended up all working out, such as life, unintended results. But, you know, I never really thought of, I still even to this day don't really think of myself as a cyclist, even though I guess I'll be receiving a world record in one for it. But originally I just wanted to raise money for a charity, the March of Dimes. And the reason for that was because I loved my niece. And it was just a way of showing how much I loved her and how grateful I was that she was in all of our lives, our family's life. And so I needed some activity to get attention for to raise money. And I, at the time, I was in a PhD program, and I had a summer off. So I looked into, you know, I knew people would run a marathon and dedicate it to something. So, you know, I thought, okay, could I run across the country? No, there's not enough time for that, even a summer. So I was like, okay, so maybe I'll bicycle. And so I looked into it. I looked into proper touring bikes, something you would cross countries or continents with. And they were like starting at $3,000 or $4,000. And at that time, I had been a student for so many years through bachelor's, through master's. Yeah, I did not have the money. So I had seen an article, and at the time I was living in New York City, of a gentleman who had took in a city bike that's like our Beaky bikes. And he had crossed the U.S. in it. And he had gotten a lot of publicity. He also got some notoriety because he apparently took it out of this bike share program. It's like one of like 50,000 bikes, but he took one. And so I wrote to him, and he responded back, and I said, I'm thinking of taking my steel single gear bike also across the country. Could you give me some tips? And he did. And then I set off. And as I was riding, people would see what I did crossing the country, and they thought I was insane. But I said, oh, no, I know someone who's done this. So I crossed the whole country. When I got back to Brooklyn, I had the last day ride through the city. And at the time I asked, at the time my girlfriend, you know, why don't you get one of those city bikes and you can follow me and we can do some filming for fundraising. And so in the morning we got on the road and she got one of those bikes and she was taking her time setting it up. And I was telling her, let's go. And she said, oh, well, I'm just checking to how to switch these three gears. And I was like, what? What gears? And she was like, the bike has three gears. And I had assumed the entire crossing of the U.S. that simple bike share bike, which is steel, but I thought it was also a single gear bike. I had no idea it had multiple gears. So I'd crossed the whole country thinking someone had done it. I probably wouldn't have attempted it otherwise. But that was why. Since then, for the next two rides, I've come to really appreciate the simplicity of it. You don't have to think so much with that single gear. You don't have to strategize with, oh, I'm approaching a mountain or elevation. Do I switch? What's the optimal gear setting and all this? No. You see the mountain, you're just like, climb it.
Right. You just find it in yourself.
Yeah.
To switch gears.
Yeah. And that simplicity is something very spiritual. It allows me to just focus on my breath and my thoughts and my feelings and the environment. And all I need to do is pedal. Now it's much harder, incredibly harder than having a proper bike. But I don't know, maybe everything beautiful has to have some kind of pain or suffering attached to it to really be appreciated.
Well, I like to go back to the idea of the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you were a man on a mission, had some exciting adventures along the way, and were able to raise money for a cause that you believe in.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though my ride is complete, there's, for anyone listening, there's always an opportunity every day. If you have a chance, go directly to Doctors Without Borders or even the other organizations. I was passionate about the World Food Program or the March of Dimes, and you can always give and support their lives and their work. It's a beautiful world. We can give and be happy.
That was Doug Concha. He cycles for charity and just completed an 18,000-mile trek across six continents in 23 countries. We'll have links on the conversation page of our website later today. Now it's time to base the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier in the show, we shared the history of a popular local fundraiser, Huli Huli Chicken. You know, it's pickup time when the smoky aroma of barbecued teriyaki floats through the neighborhood. The story goes that this unique style of cooking marinated chicken between two grills was first introduced by the head of Pacific Poultry in 1955. His special recipe, based on his Portuguese mother's teriyaki-like sauce, came to the public's attention when it was served at Farm Bureau meetings. means. The name comes from the Hawaiian word for turn and describes the process of turning the birds while cooking. The public fell in love with this new way of barbecuing, so Ernest Mercado registered the trademark Huli Huli with the territory of Hawaii in 1958 and then with the federal government in 1965. He even made it into the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest chicken barbecue, cooking over 46,000 halves for an Iolani school fundraiser back in 1981. And our winner today, Nancy Ka'ava, her dad was friends with Ernie. That's a pretty neat story. But that's our quiz for today. If you have an idea for one, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. That's it for this Aloha Friday. Coming up next week, we scan the climate bills that have crossed over at the midway point of the legislative session. What's on your mind? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can listen back to our shows on the conversation page over the HPR website or anywhere you tune into for podcasts. Our program is produced by Russell Subiano and Lillian Song, with help from Savannah Harriman-Pote and Maddie Bender. John DeMello provided our backer quiz intro and our theme music, courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.